Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Time now for us to bring in Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. JT, always great to have you on, my friend. How are you today?
I'm doing great and outstanding to be on with you and Matt today. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Yeah, so far so good. Sun shines out halfway through the work week, but wait, we are 2 days removed now from the Browns' most recent blowout. That's two now in five games this season, and it's a very disappointing loss, no question about that, especially when you consider the stage in which they performed. You just get the feeling, John, that with all the talent on this team, you shouldn't see two blowouts in five games.
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, what really blew me away is you have a situation where a lot of people were, you know, propping the Browns up in the offseason because they acquired all that talent, getting Olivier Vernon, of course, getting OBJ, the anticipation of year two with Baker Mayfield, considering how fantastic he played, especially in the final eight games of last season. And it just hasn't carried over. And I know Freddie has even said as much, and people in football will tell you that, just because a team was great, I can point to the Cardiac Kids in 1980 who were 11-5, and the next year they were 5-11. And so nothing really carries over per se, or at least you can't assume that it will. And it's just been frustrating for the fans. I certainly can side with any feelings that fans may have as to why all of the talent that is here has not meshed to the point where at least they're consistent and they're not having these incredible peaks and valleys. And that's, I think that's the most frustrating thing of all, when you have a blowout type of a win in Baltimore on the road, tough place to play, followed the next week, although I know you're going on the road and it's on a Monday night and all that, then you just get boat race from the beginning of the game. It's just very hard to figure out what is wrong. I'm sure there's a lot of people, it's like, you know, the CSI people are out, you know, combing the area for fingerprints for what in the world happened and why this dead body is lying here on the side of the road. They've just got a lot of questions, and so far they're trying to find those answers.
John, as a Browns fan, should I be concerned here, or is there the realization there's a lot of time left, this team could get it together?
Well, that's a good question, Matt, and I'll tell you what. Earlier this morning I was out and I talked to, just ran into tons of Browns fans who just wanted to chat about how the team's doing and what have you. And to a person, they felt plenty of time left, not panicking, but getting close, but still feeling that the talent is here. They obviously can coach better, which Freddie will say, but things can go for the better for this franchise. Especially they know what's awaiting the Browns, in the second half of the season, when it's not going to be as difficult. I mean, you look at these guys, and you know, I'm not making excuses for them, but their first five games, three of them are nationally televised Monday night and or Sunday night affairs. That's kind of a lot to go through also with a rookie head coach. So obviously a lot of room for improvement, but most fans that I have spoken with, Matt, have not, you know, they have not been forming a line, as we say here in Cleveland, at the 480 Bridge.
Well, good.
Well, you had talked about the peaks and valleys a couple of minutes ago, talking about so far this team has just kind of been tough to figure out. 1 week great, the next week not so great. Feels like you're getting a lot of those same peaks and valleys with Baker Mayfield. You know, what's causing this inconsistency from him?
I think first and foremost, he just doesn't feel comfortable in this iteration of the offense, whether it's when they have the 11 personnel with just one tight end and Nick Chubb in there and the three wide receivers. He doesn't have that chemistry with OBJ. He has not been accurate throwing the football. And I think you could probably point towards the pass to Antonio Callaway as an example. Sure, it touched his hands, and when a guy has the ball hit his hands, he should make the play. I get that. But, you know, Baker a year ago probably put that ball a little bit closer to the center of Callaway's body, or maybe even led him a scotch. so that he could make that catch. And he's just misfiring on stuff. I recall that sideline throw to OBJ, just, you know, grazing his fingertips and not, you know, a year ago, he puts that ball in a little bit better spot and the pass was received. So tons of things are going on with him. I think this other stuff that we're probably going to be talking about hasn't helped matters, all the off-the-field things or the fights that he gets in social media with other players like Antonio Brown and what have you. So I don't think that stuff helps, and I know that's kind of part of his character, but he's just been incredibly inconsistent. And when you have a situation where, all right, the line hasn't been great in some instances this year, but on those plays where the pass protection's been there, the routes have been run. A year ago, Baker's dead on with that pass, and he just doesn't seem to be hitting it. And I think part of it could be just that internal clock. He doesn't trust the line, perhaps, in the back of his mind. He seems to want to bail a little bit more than he did before. And I think also it's the coaching, guys. I think, Freddie, Baker... Here's this guy's suited for a three-step drop, get rid of the football. I mean, you dink and dunk down the field, but he definitely would feel more comfortable at least getting into some kind of a rhythm doing those types of things. But that hasn't been the case. So I think he'd be the first guy, too, guys, to say, I have not been up to the standards that I hold myself to. And so I don't think he's ever going to, you're going to hear Baker Mayfield say that guy missed a block, so I got knocked into next week. I think he's going to take his lumps and we'll see what kind of guy he is, what he's made of. If he can rebound, especially the next 2 weeks against teams like Seattle and the New England Patriots.
Well, he's got a lot of mouths to feed in this offense. I know we talk about that quite a bit. Odell Beckham Jr. just really isn't getting the ball enough. Now, when you win, that's an easy thing to sweep under the rug. But when you get blown out the way that Browns did on Monday, that's a tough thing to ignore. Do you think we are quickly approaching that point where this could become a bigger problem with him?
Well, so far all the signs point towards no, that he's been an incredibly good teammate, that he was the guy on the sidelines you saw on Monday night, talking to his teammates, trying to keep their spirits up, even though at the time it probably was 28-3 or maybe 21-3. Nevertheless, he has not shown any signs of that. Freddie alluded to it earlier today about downfield blocking, how he's so in tune with trying to make this a winning product that I think he's hearing about it from perhaps a national perspective where they're saying, well, Cleveland, man, you went out and bought this, you went out and got this guy, traded for this guy, and you're not using him enough. What the heck is going on there? I think Freddie earlier today was asked about why not target OBJ more in the red zone where they've not been very proficient. And Freddie sounded a little defensive, but still he was just stating facts. He said roughly 24 passes that were thrown on Monday night by Baker. I think 6 or 7 of the targets were to OBJ. So I think he was defending the sense that if the play's there and there's an opportunity to feed OBJ, then you go ahead and do that. And we saw that in one game against the Jets on a Monday night. But on this particular night against the Ravens, the afternoon against the Ravens, you saw Landry have a phenomenal game. And I think part and parcel, some of it was because of the extra attention other people were giving OBJ. I haven't heard a peep from him about, got to have my touches. There's no Terrell Owens, statement coming here about I need the football. But that's kind of inherent to that position where those guys, they know they want to help the team. And in their minds, I'm helping the team when I get the football in my hands and I can make a big play. I haven't heard that from him yet. And things can change in an instant, and if things go the way of Odell catching 7-8 balls this week for more than 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns, then that talk will kind of back off.
We're being joined by Fox 8's very own John Telich on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We'll combine a couple of elements here. The primetime attention Some are wondering if maybe that was too much for the Browns early on in the season. Then, of course, you've got handshake gate. Did he or didn't he shake his hand? And you've got the whole flag planting thing. All of these things kind of come full circle, and they really kind of bring these things out in the forefront for not only all of us here locally to see, but from a national perspective as well. People beginning to wonder, has all this primetime attention become too much?
Yeah, you know something? I think, you know, Baker is basically, he's that blue light at the Dairy Queen that attracts all the flies, and they just come towards it, and they've got something to do with him. Now, by his nature, he also attracts people that are going to come after him to make him pay for things that he did. We've known the incidents in college, whether he was, grabbing his crotch in a game against Kansas, whether it was planting the flag at Ohio State, whether it was last year just staring down Hugh Jackson. This is the nature of Baker Mayfield, and it's been okay with the people in Norman, Oklahoma. It was okay a year ago here in Cleveland, Ohio, but now it's kind of catching up to him a little bit. And I'm not saying that he's got to be a choir boy and be Mr. Bland and just recite answers to the questions that the people in the media are going to be posing to him. I don't expect him to be that cookie cutter that he kind of abhors, if you will. But it has kind of caught up in some instances where he just attracts that stuff. Whether it's Richard Sherman saying he didn't even shake his hand before the coin toss, when in reality the video showed that he did. And then after the game, Sherman to say that, you know, he didn't respect the game by not shaking my hand. And then for this thing, really not, it should not even have been any kind of a story. And Richard Sherman comes out yesterday and says on social media that, it was no big deal, I'm good. And, well, if it was no big deal, then why did you bring it up? Well, I think the nature of how Baker Mayfield is probably one of the catalysts for a guy like Richard Sherman, who's no, you know, he's not a church mouse himself, but he brought that up because he thought a perceived slight was taking place out there at midfield at Levi Stadium, when in reality, it was just your typical pregame thing. Guys were shaking hands, doing the half hugs, all that sort of stuff, and going about their business of playing football. But Baker kind of attracts that stuff, and maybe other people use that as motivation. It certainly seemed like that was the case on Monday night when Sherman even alluded to the fact that, you know, it kind of charged us up. And Nick Bosa was charged up even more so. The guy literally rehearsed doing a plant, a flag planting before the game in the event that he had an opportunity to do it. So, he's not thinking about that type of behavior for two straight years now. If it weren't for Baker's brashness to go out there at center, you know, at the midfield at the shoe and do what he did. So he kind of attracts all that stuff, guys. I think we're always going to have instances here and there that might tick people off, or he'll say something because he really doesn't seem to have an edit button at all. And I think that's just going to be part and parcel to dealing with Baker Mayfield. And if he goes south or continues to be super erratic, then it's going to be more, not sensationalized, but more of a thing that's out there about him, as opposed to the fact that, well, the guy just missed that receiver that was open. They're going to kind of conjure up reasons as to why he's not successful. Well, if he wasn't so brash, if he just kept his mouth shut and studied more football, he'd be better. So that's kind of how the fans and or obviously the media would work in this kind of an instance.
Do you think the whole Richard Sherman was kind of a part of that, him kind of taking the spotlight and Richard Sherman doing this whole, look, you're not in the fraternity yet, you've got to earn your keep before you start doing type of stuff like that?
Well, I think it probably rubbed, Matt, I think it kind of rubbed Richard Sherman the wrong way, seeing a guy come into the league and kind of talks like he's been here a long time, but he hasn't really. Witnessed the statement he made in the spring about Duke Johnson and Duke's demand to be traded, and he was literally told by some of the veterans in the locker room that you've got to kind of watch that type of stuff. And so, yeah, I think that's part and parcel to what Baker Mayfield is all about. And it kind of just brings those types of incidents to the fore. And I think that's what we saw on Monday night with Richard Sherman. Now, Richard Sherman's had his incidents in the media, and he's a loquacious guy, and he's a very good football player. His career, you know, his numbers in his career kind of speak for themselves. He's been there. But, you know, there's just something about Baker that kind of, from a distance maybe, or people around the league, some people, I'm not saying all or this is a general rule, but he just seems to affect people in that way. And you have the, you know, Nick Bosa is kind of a soft-spoken, kind of quiet guy. Not, you know, he's not super brash by any, and he's a rookie, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he was hesitant to you know, to even want to. He said, "I don't even really want to talk about this stuff," but he had it coming. And so I think a lot of people in their back of their minds think Baker has something coming to him, because how dare he come in here and be so brash and be outspoken or just be his own man when he's not the quintessential boring, bland, say the repetitive answers to the questions in that way that does not inflame anyone. He's just a different cat, and it's either going to take him down or it's going to elevate him to be one of the best players in the game. We don't know just yet.
One more Browns question, John, and then we'll transition into some high school. Wait, the defense allowed nearly 300 yards on the ground this past week. Part of that could be a result of falling behind so quickly. But what are some of the major factors in allowing that much yardage on the ground?
Well, earlier in the week, last week, Steve Wilks said, got to have eye discipline. And from the first play, they didn't have eye discipline. The rookie linebacker, Mac Wilson, kind of overshot his lane. And another factor as to why I believe the 49ers ran the football so well, one of the most underrated guys in the NFL is Northeast Ohio's own Kyle Juszczyk. I mean, this guy is a fantastic football player. What a blocker he is. And where he is, a running back is nearby, and he's usually helping them run very, very well. So I'm not just saying because he's there, they're incredibly successful, but the Browns just should have played better. The defensive line got pushed around. Obviously, they got to Garoppolo here and there, but not, you know, a ton of times. But they just got outplayed in all phases of the game. And, you know, you can't excuse away 275 yards on the ground. It's simply, there's no excuse for it. It's bad football.
All right, my friend. Well, another big weekend of high school football on the horizon. Lots of terrific matchups coming our way. And, wait, the playoff picture certainly getting a little bit clearer as well.
It sure is. Now, in, of course, Division One, you have the Holy War taking place in Week 7 this year. So, Eds and Ignatius, that will be one to watch quite a bit. I think if you go out to the far east in the Hilltopper country, that's going to be a game to watch. It's Kenston, the defending state champions, taking on Chardon. Now, folks may remember a year ago, like October 19th might have been the date, but Coach Hewitt, Mitch Hewitt of the Hilltoppers, was on the doorstep with time nearly gone in that game, and he made the gutsy decision to go for a touchdown as opposed to lining up and kicking a field goal that would have sent this thing into overtime. He chose to go for it, and he was rewarded, upset Kenston. And I think by doing what he did and beating Kenston on that date in October a year ago, he didn't ensure that the Bombers would go and win a state championship, but he certainly provided them with an incredible amount of motivation as they went forward and won their five playoff games and were crowned state champions. So no telling what's going to happen in a game between Kenston and Chardon. I think that's one to watch. Euclid has Solon. That I think that'll be a kind of an interesting affair. And the Metter Cards, they are home. Avon is taking on North Olmsted. Avon remains unbeaten, still a tremendous football team and program. So there's lots of stuff to keep an eye on this week for Friday Night Touchdown. And I know you guys will be super busy as well.
No doubt about it. We wouldn't have it any other way, my friend.
You bet.
Good stuff. Well, JT, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us, and we will do this again next week.
Okay, guys. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks again.
Thanks, John. Again, that's John Telich with Fox 8 joining us on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We need to take a break. Matt and I will come back with more after this. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.